Welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. Today we'll look at a couple of subjects in the news. We'll begin in a moment and talk about the testimony of the White House counsel, Gonzalez, who is being nominated to be the next Attorney General. We'll be talking to Admiral John Hudson, who is a dean and president of the Franklin Pierce Law Center. He was the lead-off testimony against after Gonzalez had finished, and he testified about the effect of Gonzalez's ruling suggesting that the Geneva Convention on Torture was quite an obsolete. Admiral Hudson talked about that in terms of the effect it's had on the military. He's a former JAG officer, so we'll be talking to him both about his feelings about Attorney General Designate and the effect so far of the White House's policies allowing torturing, which is, of course has caused a tremendous embarrassment to the United States and to its efforts in the Middle East. We'll also talk with Steve Clemens, who's a senior fellow at the New American Foundation. He organized a couple of very important conferences in Washington recently. A few weeks ago, Al-Qaeda 2.0, a conference with most of the people with the knowledge about Al-Qaeda. Obviously, they're not in government and not having any influence over this White House, but nevertheless, it was an important conference. And then just this week, he organized a conference at which Brent Scowcroft, the former National Security Advisor under President George Herbert Walker Bush, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, Jimmy Carter's National Security Advisor, both spoke. The title of the conference was Charting a Roadmap for U.S. Foreign Policy. And there was quite a bit of press about General Scowcroft's remarks, where he made it very clear that he thought the elections in Iraq, rather than bring about some kind of stability and exit strategy for the United States, might in fact deepen the hole that the United States is in and precipitate a civil war. So we'll be talking to Steve Clemens about the conference and getting a kind of precis of the viewpoints that were expressed there. Then we'll talk with Dr. Fritz Stern, who is the University Professor Emeritus at Columbia University. He taught European history at Columbia for many years. He's the author of The Politics of Cultural Despair and Einstein's German World. He spoke when he received the Leo Beck Medal recently. He spoke of analogies to him growing up in Nazi Germany as a child and the descent of Germany from decency to barbarism. Poses the question, how was it possible? And we'll be talking to Fritz Stern about analogies that some have been expressed about the United States with a one-party government heading in the direction of pre-war Germany. So obviously there's been a lot of loose analogies over the years where people on the left reflexively refer to conservatives as fascists. So we certainly won't be that superficial, but we'll try and get a sense of this man's experience of having seen the Nazis take over Germany and what he thinks about the current state of political diversity in this country. I'm speaking with Admiral John D. Hudson, who's the Dean and President Franklin Pierce Law Center, and he testified this week before the Senate Judiciary Committee into the confirmation of Alberto Gonzalez, the White House counsel, who was President Bush's nominee to become the next Attorney General. And I take it from your experience, Admiral Hudson, as a JAG officer and in the Naval Investigative Services, that you bring to the table a military perspective on the extent of the damage that's already been done in vis-a-vis a apparently loosening or weakening our connections to the Geneva Convention on Torture. I mean, the first question, of course, we've had Abu Ghraib, and this ongoing agony has been made clear, and there's been a lot of reporting on it from Seymour Hersh, who I've interviewed a couple of times, and he's in fact written a book about it. My question is just a rhetorical one. How could people high in the Pentagon and in the White House have thought that you could get away with skirting the Geneva Convention and somehow nobody would notice, in particularly in the age of digital cameras?
That's an excellent question. I think that what we've seen represents both arrogance and naivete, which, if you can be both arrogant and naive at the same time. I think that's what we see in the pictures I think that's what we've seen in the memos that Judge Gonzales wrote or was otherwise responsible for. There is great hubris in what we see, but there is also an utter lack of understanding of the role that the United States has historically played over the last several generations in the world scene in terms of support for human rights and the rule of law, and a naivete about the role of the Geneva Conventions in terms of protecting U.S. troops. Even if you are of the school that they're all terrorists so that we can do anything we want to do with them, which is not a philosophy to which I subscribe, but even if you are, the fact of the matter is that the Geneva Conventions support and protect U.S. troops now and in the future. And I think that the administration and Judge Gonzales specifically have completely missed that point.
Well, I must say, just as an observer, it is disheartening and I think somewhat embarrassing to see the United States Senate confirming or talking to a nominee who's obviously a shoo-in. And the hearings were pretty much perfunctory to the extent to which it's a done deal that he'll be confirmed. The idea that Senator Kennedy, when questioning him, that the nominee, Alberto Gonzales, had to sort of think for a moment as to whether cutting off fingers constituted torture. To me, I just feel like this nation has sunk into a kind of morass of disrepute. I mean, it's just downright embarrassing.
Well, yeah, it is. It seems as though we're in a maze, and every time we take a turn, we become more lost than we were before. I'll tell you, Ian, sitting in that hearing and listening to that kind of testimony and the answers of, well, I'll have to get back to you on that, Senator, you know, I don't recall, I'd have to look up the law on that, to what I think any school child would have recognized were really pretty softball questions. You know, they were trying to throw him lifelines, and he wouldn't accept them in several cases. You had the feeling you were sitting sort of in a government office in Chile, perhaps, in, you know, the Pinchot government, debating the pros and cons of torture. And in reference to your specific point, when you are part of a series of memos which has defined torture to include only pain resulting in permanent organ damage or death, then cutting off fingers, not resulting in permanent organ damage or death, doesn't seem to be torture. So that there is this sort of surreal feel about the whole discussion, quite frankly.
None of the questioning seems to extend out to the broader context of who's responsible for us getting into Iraq in the first place, into the mess in the first place, where we were strategically blind, or strategically dumb, some people think, and certainly tactically blind. And obviously this impetus to resort to torture was out of frustration because we didn't know what we're up against and who we're up against, and we still don't seem to have a handle on it. I wish that there was more of a debate going on in this country about getting into Iraq and by extension, getting out.
Well, you may hear more debate about that. You did have a sense, being in Washington the last week, that the tide was sort of turning and that people are starting to realize that this is not going to be something that is going to be accomplished easily or quickly. You know, we've got these elections coming up, which people have been looking to as sort of a turning point. Question now becomes, yeah, there may be a turning point, but which direction is it going to turn, you know, for the better or worse? And I think that we do have to constantly reevaluate what sort of commitment, what is victory, when have we won, when can we leave, when have we achieved success? And I don't think that right now the American public has a strong sense of what success in Iraq really is or what failure in Iraq really is.
But meanwhile, the president is surrounding himself with the very people who got us into Iraq, and those that warned against it have been marginalized or fired, like Powell and Armitage. Those that got us into it, Tommy Franks, Tenet, and Paul Bremer, were just given the highest civilian honor. So, and Gonzales seems to be also in that bag. So is this really about a president who's just surrounding himself with people he's comfortable with and, by extension, people who agree with him?
You know, after having spent 28 years in the Navy, I think I have a pretty good sense that strong, healthy government requires strong, healthy internal debate. You have to be able to consider options, alternatives. People have to be willing and able to play the devil's advocate. And if good people like Powell, like Armitage, Will Taft, who was Powell's general counsel at the State Department and had been Deputy Secretary of Defense in prior administrations and was adamantly opposed to these torture memos but was shut down, if they leave and the only people that are left are people that are kind of fall in line, then it becomes a dangerous situation because that debate encourages people to keep their eyes open. And I think that it ensures that the government will ultimately take the right path because all the options will have been considered. Lack of debate fosters the opposite situation, I fear.
In a historical context, obviously we've had cronyism before in terms of the Attorney General's relationship with the President, the most flagrant of all being Jack Kennedy putting his brother Bobby Kennedy in there. What's your feelings on the independence or lack thereof of an Attorney General? Because it's worth noting, for example, that Janet Reno did Bill Clinton no favors.
That's right.
And she just allowed special prosecutor after special prosecutor to hound him and his cabinet members. And it's worth noting that only one special prosecutor has been appointed by in the first Bush term, and that is the Fitzgerald, who's looking into the outing of Valerie Plame, the wife of Ambassador Joe Wilson.
There is no more important position, I think, to support the rule of law than Attorney General. I think that the Attorney General of the United States, more than or differently than any other cabinet post, bears an important and cherished responsibility to the American people and to the rule of law, not just to the administration as an entity or to the president as an individual. They bear a responsibility and a loyalty in that direction as well, but they also have this huge responsibility to the people of the United States, so that if they are a crony of the president, they oftentimes are not going to be able to fulfill that important part of their responsibility as the AG. And